From the downtown Minneapolis studios of News Talk 830 WCCO, this is Minnesota's most trusted station for news.
27 degrees, partly cloudy at 8:04. I'm Sloan Martin, News Talk 830 WCCO. This hour's top story, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, like all of us, following the situation in D.C. today. In a statement this evening, the former high school history teacher said, "We must recognize that democracy cannot be taken for granted."
As you're watching things unfold and as stability gets brought back in, know here in Minnesota that we understand this, that when our politics gets to the point where everything becomes so fractured, it's very difficult, and it's very difficult to run society that way. And so I want to acknowledge that eyes are on what's happening in D.C., but also to acknowledge here that the Minnesota way of doing things is still stable. We disagree on certain things, but our values are the same.
The governor also announcing some loosening of the state's COVID-19 restrictions today. Starting Monday, restaurants and bars can open for in-person service at 50% capacity, closing at 10 p.m. Other businesses like movie theaters and museums can open at 25%. We have a full rundown on our website, WCCORadio.com. Senators right now back on the floor this evening, lamenting a historical day in the nation's history. The violence outside the U.S. Capitol today happened as both houses of Congress were performing the ceremonial certification of the presidential election, one that was marred by some Republicans who pushed a futile challenge of the effort. Texas Senator Ted Cruz was one of the leaders of that, and Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar called him out on it.
He knows that all 10 living defense secretaries, including both of Trump's defense secretaries, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, William Cohen, he knows that all these leaders have come together to say that these scurrilous attacks on our democracy must stop, and we must allow for a peaceful transition of power.
At least one person was killed at the Capitol today. Hundreds here in St. Paul protested outside the Capitol and at the governor's residence today. U of M Humphrey School political scientist Larry Jacobs calls what happened today shocking in a new chapter of American history.
To have the Capitol storm, to have the president inciting the rioters is something we've never seen in our history before.
Jacobs says it's not uncommon for election results to produce frustration. It did for Democrats in 2016, but what's happened is monumental.
What we saw today was, you know, part of the frustration that he has, that he's lost the election and he has no further recourse.
Jacobs says drafting the articles of impeachment, as Congresswoman Ilhan Omar is a part of, is not practical because it does take weeks. He says he's confident there will be a peaceful transition of power and there will be an inauguration on the 20th, as specified in the Constitution. WCCO News Time is 8:07. Now for a check of your weather.
Your Exergen weather forecast on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Tonight we'll have some patchy fog after 9 o'clock, dropping to 20 degrees overnight. Tomorrow, areas of patchy fog continuing, otherwise cloudy and a high near 27. Friday, cloudy and 26 degrees is the high. Saturday, cloudy and 29. I'm Sloan Martin. We'll return to CBS News coverage.
Country, one destiny. So on this holy day of Epiphany, let us pray. I'm a big believer in prayer. Let us pray that there will be and that it will begin with us. Let us pray that God will continue to bless America. And with that, with our responsibilities to the Constitution, to which we have just within 72 hours taken the oath to uphold. For what purpose does the gentleman from Maryland...
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi there.
Madam Speaker, I rise in opposition to the objection.
Gentleman is recognized.
House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer of Maryland.
Speaker, it is a sad day in America. It is a wrenching day in America. It is a day in which our words and our actions have had consequences of a very, very negative nature. We ought to watch our words and think what it may mean to some. My remarks were written before the tragic, dangerous, and unacceptable actions. And unacceptable is such a tame word. My remarks started with, Madam Speaker, the American people today are witnessing one of the greatest challenges to our democracy in its 2,244-year history. Little did I know that this Capitol would be attacked by the enemy within. I was here on 9/11 when we were attacked by the enemy without. We need to all work together to tame and reduce the anger, and yes, the hate that some stoke. What some, not all, Madam Speaker, but some in this House and in this Senate are doing today will not change the outcome of the election, which is the clear and insurmountable victory of President-elect Biden and Vice President-elect Harris. Instead, all they will accomplish is to further the dangerous divisions. This was written before Capitol was assaulted, before this democracy was put aside by thousands. Encouraged by the Commander-in-Chief. Instead, all they will accomplish further the dangerous divisions among our people and energize conspiracy theories stoked by our foreign adversaries, which seek to erode America's confidence in our democracy and our system of free and fair elections. I was here in 2000. I was strongly in favor of Al Gore for president. And my candidate got more votes than the other candidate. His name was George Bush, of course. And one of the saddest days was January 20th of 2001, when our candidate, who won the election in my view, was not elected. But it was also one of the proudest moments of my career, because the greatest power on earth passed peacefully from Bill Clinton to George W. Bush. Not a shot was fired. Nobody assaulted this caucus or this Congress or this chamber. Because we were not disappointed? No. Because we were not angry? No. Because we believe in democracy. We believe in we the people. And the way the people, one of the speakers, I think it was the senator from Texas, expressed, we're here for the people. If those were the people, we're in a lot of trouble. Our electoral system, however, did not break under the strains of the misinformation, the claims of fraud, which court after court after court have dismissed out of hand. Not because there was a little evidence, because there was no evidence. That's why we're the longest lasting constitutional democracy in the world. I hope all of us in this body are proud of that and understand why that's the case. Because, as Dick Gephardt said on this floor many years ago, democracy is a substitute to resolve differences. It proved once more than ever beating strong heart that gives life to our republic and our freedoms. That strength, Madam Speaker, is apart from our institution and our laws. But most importantly, it is powered by citizens and leaders' commitment to our Constitution. Not just us. We swear an oath. But it's all of America. Barack Obama spoke from that chamber and he said, I'm going to be taking another title next year. Citizen. And he was proud to take that. And every citizen needs to protect, preserve, and uplift our democracy. Some today did not do that. Many today. 68 years ago in Springfield, Illinois, Governor Adlai Stevenson gracefully conceded his loss to General Dwight Eisenhower. He said this, it is traditionally American, he told his deeply disappointed supporters, to fight hard before an election. But then he added, it is equally traditional to close ranks as soon as the people have spoken, not the Congress, not the electors, the people. Has spoken. That which unites us as American citizens is far greater than that which divides us as political parties. It was another man from Springfield, 48 years earlier, who won re-election to the presidency in a national crisis that tested our country and its democratic institutions, who pleaded even in his hour of victory for the same spirit of reconciliation. That was the party of Lincoln. That happened to this hour. Lincoln said, now that the election is over, he asked, may not all, having a common interest, reunite in a common effort to save our common country? Such is the duty of an American who stands for elections or participates in our politics, to be either humble in triumph or gracious in defeat. I've lost some elections, not too many, and I've won a lot of elections. And I hope that I've been gracious in defeat and humble in victory. I hope that I put my...
Steny Hoyer, Republican from Maryland. Let's switch to the Senate floor. This is Missouri Senator Josh Hawley.
In the United States of America, we cannot say emphatically enough, this is not how you achieve change. Violence is not how you achieve something better. Our Constitution was built and put into place so that there would be, in the word, no appeal from ballots to bullets, which is what we saw, unfortunately, attempted tonight. There is no place for that in the United States of America. That's why I submit to my colleagues that what we're doing here tonight is actually very important. Because for those who have concerns about the integrity of our elections, those who have concerns about what happened in November, this is the appropriate means. This is the lawful place objections and concerns should be heard. This is the forum that the law provides for, our laws provide for those concerns to be registered, not through violence, not by appealing from ballots to bullets, but here in this lawful process. And so to those who say that this is just a formality today, an antique ceremony that we've engaged in for a couple of hundred years, I can't say that I agree. I can't say that our precedents suggest that. I actually think it's very vital what we do. The opportunity to be heard, to register objections, is very vital because this is the place where those objections are to be heard and dealt with and finally resolved in this lawful means, peacefully, without violence, without attacks, without bullets. And so, Mr. President, let me just say now briefly, in lieu of speaking about it later, a word about Pennsylvania, which is a state that I have been focused on, objected to, as an example of why people are concerned, millions of Americans concerned about our election integrity. The state of Pennsylvania, quite apart from allegations of any fraud, you have a state constitution that has been interpreted for over a century to say that there is no mail-in balloting permitted except for in very narrow circumstances that's also provided for in the law. And yet, last year, Pennsylvania elected officials passed a whole new law that allows universal mail-in balloting and did it irregardless of what the Pennsylvania Constitution said. And then when Pennsylvania citizens tried to go and be heard on this subject before the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, missed on grounds of procedure, timeliness, in violation of that Supreme Court's own precedent. So the merits of the case have never been heard. The constitutionality of the statute actually has never been defended. I'm not aware of any court that has passed on its constitutionality. Actually, I'm not aware of anybody who's defended the constitutionality. And this was the statute that governed this last election, in which there are over 2.5 million mail-in ballots in Pennsylvania. This is my point, that this is the forum. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court hasn't heard the case. There's no other court to go to hear the case in the state. And so this is the appropriate place for these concerns to be raised, which is why I have raised them here today. And I hope that this body will not miss the opportunity to take affirmative action to address the concerns of so many millions of Americans, to say to millions of Americans tonight that violence is never warranted, that violence will not be tolerated, that those who engage in it will be prosecuted, but that this body will act to address the concerns of all Americans across the country. We do need an investigation of these fraud. We do need a way forward together. We need election security reforms. I bet my friends on the other side of the aisle don't disagree with that. We need to find a way to move forward on that together so that the American people from both parties, all walks of life, can have confidence in their elections and that we can arrange ourselves under the rule of law that we share together. Thank you, Mr. President. I yield the floor.
Missouri Republican Senator Josh Hawley.
Democratic leader.
Senator from Pennsylvania, Mr. Casey.
Senator from Pennsylvania.
Bob Casey, Democrat, Pennsylvania.
I rise tonight to defend the people of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, to defend the more than 6.9 million voters who voted in this election, and to condemn in the strong terms this attempt to disenfranchise the voters of Pennsylvania based upon a lie, a falsehood. That same lie sowed the seeds of today's violence and today's lawlessness here in the Capitol. One of my constituents, Susan from the Lehigh Valley, the community of our state where Senator Toomey lives, wrote to my office and perhaps said it best. She said, and I quote, "We cannot allow anybody to overturn the legal votes of the citizens of Pennsylvania. This would be the ultimate destruction of our democracy," unquote. Susan had it right. We cannot allow anybody, and she put that word in all caps, to overturn the legal votes of the people of our state. Let me address the allegation regarding the Pennsylvania Constitution and the General Assembly. Somehow that the General Assembly didn't have the authority to enact no-excuse mail-in voting, that process for the people of our state. First, the law in question, Act 77, was passed in 2019 and was implemented without any serious question as to its constitutionality. The law was passed by a Republican-controlled General Assembly, House and Senate. It was only after the 2020 election, when it became clear that Joe Biden won Pennsylvania by a little more than 80,000 votes, did some Republican politicians in our state decide to challenge the constitutionality of the law. Second, Act 77 is plainly constitutional. My colleagues allege that the state constitution requires in-person voting except under limited circumstances. This is not true. While Pennsylvania lays out specific situations in which absentee voting is required, there is no in-person requirement in our state's constitution. The constitution set a floor, not a ceiling, for this type of voting. Second, apart from the argument made by my colleague, there's bipartisan agreement across our state, at the local, state, and federal level, that our election was fair, secure, and lawful. On Monday, my colleague from Pennsylvania, Senator Toomey, wrote in an op-ed, and I'm quoting, "The evidence is overwhelming that Joe Biden won the election," unquote. There's simply no evidence to justify the outrageous claims of widespread voter fraud or election irregularities suggested by those seeking to overturn the election. 60 cases, court after court, all throughout our state and throughout the country, including the Supreme Court, dealing with this bizarre argument that we know is based upon that lie. In one court, the United States Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit, Judge Bibas, appointed by President Trump, he said, quote, "The campaign's claims have no merit," unquote. The United States, he said, has free and fair elections, which are the lifeblood of our democracy. Charges require specific allegations and then proof. We have neither here, unquote. So said Judge Bibas. Finally, Mr. President, a word about those election officials who did such work. These election officials all across our state, Republicans and Democrats from red counties and blue counties, they did their jobs. They are patriots. And these objections are an attack on these Pennsylvania public servants. Give you one example. Republican Commissioner Al Schmidt, of Philadelphia. He wrote, I will quote as follows. Quote, "There really should not be a disagreement, regardless of party affiliation, when we're talking about counting votes by eligible voters. It's not a very controversial thing, or at least it shouldn't be," unquote. After Election Day, Commissioner Al Schmidt, his family, and his colleagues were subjected to death threats simply because he was trying to do his job with integrity. It calls to mind, Mr. President, that great line from America the Beautiful, "O beautiful for patriot dream that sees beyond the years." These election officials, like so many of our patriots, we heard from Senator Duckworth tonight, a real patriot. These patriots did their job. Let's support these patriots. Vote against this objection.
Majority Leader. I yield 5 minutes to the Senator from Utah, Senator Romney.
Senator from Utah.
Mitt Romney, Republican.
Today was heartbreaking, and I was shaken to the core as I thought about the people I've met in China and Russia and Afghanistan and Iraq and other places who yearn for freedom and who look to this building and these shores as a place of hope. And I saw the images being broadcast around the world, and it breaks my heart. I have 25 grandchildren. Many of them were watching TV, thinking about this building, whether their grandpa was okay. I knew I was okay. I must tell you as well, I was proud to serve with these men and women. This is an extraordinary group of people. I'm proud to be a member of the United States Senate and meet with people of integrity as we do here today. Now we gather due to a selfish man's injured pride and the outrage of supporters who he has deliberately misinformed for the past 2 months and stirred to action this very morning. What happened here today was an insurrection incited by the President of the United States. Those who choose to continue to support his dangerous gambit by objecting to the results of a legitimate democratic election will forever be seen as being complicit in an unprecedented attack against our democracy. Fairly or not, they'll be remembered for their role in this shameful episode in American history. That will be their legacy. I salute Senator Langford and Loeffler and Braun and Daines, and I'm sure others, who in the light of today's outrage have withdrawn their objection. For any who remain insistent on an audit in order to satisfy the many people who believe that the election was stolen, I'd offer this perspective. No congressional audit is ever going to convince these voters, particularly when the president will continue to say that the election was stolen. The best way we can show respect for the voters who are upset is by telling them the truth. That's the burden. That's the duty of leadership. The truth is that President-elect Biden won the election. President Trump lost. I've had that experience myself. It's no fun. Scores of courts, the president's own attorney general, state election officials, both Republican and Democrat, have reached that unequivocal decision. And in light of today's sad circumstances, I ask my colleague, do we weigh our own political fortunes more heavily than we weigh the strength of our republic, the strength of our democracy, and the cause of freedom? What's the weight of personal acclaim compared to the weight of conscience? Leader McConnell said that the vote today is the most important in his 36 years of public service. Think of that. Authorizing two wars, voting on two impeachments. He said that not because the vote reveals something about the election. It's because this vote reveals something about us. I urge my colleagues to move forward with completing the electoral count, to refrain from further objections, and to unanimously affirm the legitimacy of the presidential election. Thank you, Mr. President.
Utah Republican Mitt Romney, the Republican nominee for president in 2012.
Senator from New Hampshire, Senator Shaheen.
Senator from New Hampshire.
Mr. President, on January 3rd, I, along with 31 of my colleagues, stood in this chamber and swore an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. It's both ironic and deeply disappointing that only 3 days after swearing these oaths, some of my colleagues are willfully coming close to breaking this promise. Since 1797, each U.S. president has peacefully handed over power to the next, and that will happen again on January 20th when Donald Trump, despite the protesters today, the violence today, when Donald Trump leaves the White House at noon and Joe Biden becomes president. And we've heard tonight from both Democrats and Republicans about the importance of the voters speaking in the election and about the fact that there is no evidence of widespread voter fraud. But this is not just an issue for us here in the United States. This is an issue for nascent democracies around the world who, as Senator Romney said, look to the United States as an example. We are the shining city on the hill. We give those struggling under oppression hope for a better future. Now, like so many of us in this chamber, I've traveled to developing democracies around the world, to Afghanistan and Iraq, to the Western Balkans, to Africa, to the country of Georgia. I went there with my colleague, Senator Risch. In 2012, we went to Georgia to observe officially on behalf of the Senate the election between outgoing President Mikhail Saakashvili and his United National Movement Party and the challenge by Georgian Dream, which was a newly formed party supported and funded by billionaire oligarch Bidzina Ivanishvili. It was a battle for parliament, but also for control of the government. Senator Risch and I visited multiple polling places on Election Day, and we agreed with the international assessment that that election was free and fair and that Georgian Dream were the winners. But there was real concern in the country that Saakashvili was going to refuse to give up power, that would lead to violence, it would end the nascent democratic reforms that were happening in that former Soviet republic. And so Senator Risch and I, the day after the election, went to visit President Saakashvili to try and talk him out of staying in power. And I remember very clearly going to his home, and we sat down with him and we pointed out that the hallmark of a democracy, what he had worked so hard for in his 8 years as president of Georgia, the hallmark of that was to turn over power in a peaceful election to the person that the voters chose. Well, President Saakashvili listened to us, and he did leave office peacefully. But it's important that future generations recognize that America, like democracies everywhere, depends on a peaceful transition of power, on believing in what the voters say and in ensuring that happens. Unfortunately, we've heard from some senators today who have been enabling President Trump's willful disregard of the votes of our citizenry, even as they speak out against foreign leaders who ignore their own people. They will fail, and history will remember them. And I hope that future generations will view the actions of some of those folks today as little more than an unfortunate anomaly. Future opportunists may use this ill-fated effort to seek short-term political gain over the long-term stability of our country. But for the sake of our great country and America's standing in the world, I ask my colleagues today to fully endorse the results of the free and fair election and set aside this partisan attempt to subvert the will of the people. We should be venerating the peaceful transition of power, even if our own preferred candidate didn't win. That is, after all, who we are in the United States of America. Thank you, Mr. President.
Majority Leader.
Mr. President, I yield up to 5 minutes to the Senator from Ohio, Senator Portman.
Senator from Ohio.
Mr. Vice President, you have fulfilled your duties as President of the Senate tonight with distinction, and we all appreciate it. I thought about changing my mind and not speaking tonight, given the lateness of the hour, and I know all of my colleagues would have appreciated that greatly. But I felt it was necessary to speak because I want the American people, particularly my constituents in Ohio, to see that we will not be intimidated, that we will not be disrupted from our work, that here in the citadel of democracy, we will continue to do the work of the people. Mob rule is not going to prevail here. Now, let's face it, we did not reclaim this chamber tonight. Brave and selfless law enforcement officers stood in the breach and ensured that the citadel of democracy would be protected and that we would be defended. And we are deeply grateful for that, as is the nation. I've listened carefully to the comments of my colleagues, and I've listened over the past couple of weeks as this issue has been discussed. And I tell you, for me, it's not a hard decision. I stand with the Constitution. I stand with what the Constitution makes clear. The people and the states hold the power here, not us. My oath to the Constitution and my reverence for our democratic principles make it easy for me to confirm these state certifications. By the way, I posed this process some 15 years ago when some Democrats chose to object to the electors from my home state of Ohio after the 2004 elections. I opposed it then, and I oppose it now. I said at the time, Congress must not thwart the will of the people. That's what we would be doing. Let's assume for a moment that those who object to the certifications are right, that the Constitution intended that a bare majority of members of Congress could circumvent the states that have chosen to certify the popular votes of their own state citizens. I ask the objectors to think about the precedent that would be set if we were to do that. What if the majority in the House and the Senate was of the other party when a presidential candidate of our party came through a close presidential election? Would you want a Congress controlled by the Democrats to play the role you now intend for us? It is asking Congress to substitute its judgment for the judgment of the voters, and its judgment for the judgment of the states that certified the results. And even forgetting the dangerous precedent that would be set, what would be the basis for objecting in this election? Look, I voted for President Trump. I supported him because I believe the Trump administration's policies are better for Ohio and for the country. And I supported the Trump campaign's right to pursue recounts. They had every right to do it. And legal challenges. I agree that there were instances of fraud and irregularities in the 2020 elections. I think we all do. And by the way, there is fraud and irregularities in every presidential election. But after 2 months of recounts and legal challenges, not a single state recount changed the result. And of the dozens of lawsuits filed, not one found evidence or irregularities widespread enough to change the result of the election. This was the finding of numerous Republican-appointed judges and the Trump administration's own Department of Justice. Every state has now weighed in and chosen to certify its electoral slate based on the popular vote as set out in the Constitution. I understand that many Americans who would never storm this Capitol don't trust the integrity of the 2020 election. Don't think the state should have certified. Don't think we should have accepted the results from the states and are insisting on more transparency and accountability. In the 2016 elections, lest we forget, many Democrats objected to the results and distrusted the election. I challenge my colleagues on both sides of the aisle to listen, but also to do our part to try to restore faith in our elections. Mr. President, we should all work to improve the integrity of the electoral system and the confidence of the American people in this bedrock of our great democratic republic. Today, I'll do my constitutional duty and oppose these efforts to reject the state-certified results. And tomorrow, in the wake of this attack on the Capitol, the pandemic that engulfs us, and other national challenges, let's work together for the people. Yield back.
Rob Portman, Republican of Ohio.
Mr. President, I believe we have 8 minutes left, so I'd like to divide 4 to Senator King and 4 to Senator Van Hollen.
That's correct, Leader.
Mr. President,
Senator from Maine.
Mr. President, Winston Churchill once said that he could do a 2-hour speech extemporaneously, but a 10-minute speech took immense preparation. I don't know what he would have said about a 4-minute speech. We are a 240-year anomaly in world history. We think that what we have here in this country is the way it's always been. It is a very unusual form of government. The normal form of government throughout world history is dictators, kings, czars, pharaohs, warlords, tyrants. And we thought 20 years ago the march of history was toward democracy, but it is in retreat in Hungary, in Turkey, goodness knows in Russia. Democracy as we have practiced it is fragile. It's fragile and it rests upon trust. It rests upon trust in facts. It rests upon trust in courts, in public officials, and yes, in elections. I don't sympathize or justify or in any way support, that's putting it mildly, what happened here today, but I understand it. I understand it because I saw those people interviewed today and they said, we're here because this election has been stolen. And the reason they said that is that their leader has been telling them that every day for 2 months. We cannot afford to pull bricks out from the foundation of trust that underlies our entire system. And I agree with Governor Romney that the answer to this problem is to tell people the truth, is to tell them what happened. It's easy to confront your opponents. It's hard to confront your friends. It's hard to tell your supporters something they don't want to hear. But that's our obligation. That's why the word leader is applied to people in jobs like ours. It's not supposed to be easy. It's supposed to be something that we take on as a sacred obligation. And if people believe something that isn't true, it's our obligation to tell them, no, I'm sorry, it isn't. Just as Senator Portman just said, as Mike Lee just said, I'm sorry, we can't do this here. We don't want to do this here. This is a power reserved to the states, not to the Congress. And I agree with the majority leader. I think this is one of the most important votes any of us will take. On December 1st, 1862, Abraham Lincoln came to this building. He came to this building in the darkest days of the Civil War. He was trying to awaken the Congress to the crisis that we were facing. And he didn't feel that they were fully and effectively engaged. And he ended his speech that day with words that I think have an eerie relevance tonight. Here's what Abraham Lincoln said. Fellow Americans, we cannot escape history. We of this Congress and this administration will be remembered in spite of ourselves. No personal significance or insignificance can spare one or another of us. And here's his final words. The fiery trial through which we pass will light us down in honor or dishonor to the latest generation. The fiery trial through which we pass will light us down in honor or dishonor to the latest generation. Thank you, Mr. President. I yield the floor.
Angus King, independent senator from Maine.
Senator from Maryland.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Chris Van Hollen of Maryland.
The mob violence and attack we saw on our Capitol today should be a wake-up call to each and every one of us of what happens when we fail to come together, not as Democrats and Republicans, but each of us as Americans, to stand up to a president who time and again has shown contempt for our democracy, contempt for our Constitution. Today here on the Capitol, we witnessed people taking down an American flag and putting up a Trump flag. That is not democracy in the United States of America. As every senator who has spoken has mentioned, we have for hundreds of years a transfer of power. Nobody likes to lose, and supporters of the losing candidate are always disappointed. What's different this time? We all know what's different this time. We had a president who, as a senator from New Jersey, said even before a vote was cast, that if he didn't win the election, it was going to be a fraud. And every day since then has perpetrated that lie. We have a president who just today criticized very loyal vice president who is presiding right now, urging him to disregard his responsibilities under the Constitution of the United States in order to reinstall Donald Trump as president. The same person who got on the phone to the Secretary of State in Georgia and threatened him to change the results of the election. Mr. President, I read something this week I'd never thought I'd read in a newspaper in the United States of America. It was an op-ed by all the living former Secretaries of Defense, including Secretaries Rumsfeld, Cheney, and Mattis, warning the country about our tradition of peaceful transfer of power and that it would be inappropriate for the military to take sides. In the United States of America, we talk to the world about how we want to promote democracy and our values, and right here at home, too many are undermining those values. And Mr. President, Donald Trump could not do this alone. He can only do it if he's aided and abetted by individuals who are willing to perpetrate those lies and those conspiracies. And that is why it is so important that we as Democrats and Republicans and senators stand up together. Stand up together and tell the truth. You know, when you go into a court of law like those 60 cases, you're testifying under penalty of perjury. That's very different than here in the House and the Senate. And in all those 60 cases under penalty of perjury, there was no evidence of widespread fraud. So it should be easy for us all together to tell the truth. On January 20th, Joe Biden will be sworn in as the next president of the United States. He has said he wants to bring the country together. He has said he wants to bring Democrats and Republicans together to do some of the pressing business of this country, to defeat this pandemic, to get the economy going again, to face challenging issues of racial and social justice. I hope we will learn from what happened today, the mob attack on this Capitol, the price we pay when we don't stand up for the truth and for democracy. James McHenry, Maryland's delegate to the Constitutional Convention, wrote about a famous exchange in his diaries between Elizabeth Willing Powell and Benjamin Franklin. Wrote, a lady asked Dr. Franklin, well, doctor, what have we got, a republic or a monarchy? A republic, replied Dr. Franklin, if you can keep it. My colleagues, this is a test of whether we united to keep our republic. I hope we will pass the test together. Thank you.
Majority Leader.
Mr. President, I yield up to 5 minutes to the Senator from South Carolina, Senator Graham.
Lindsey Graham Senator from South, of South Carolina.
Many times my state has been the problem. I love it. It's where I want to die, but no time soon. Tim and I have a good relationship. I love Tim Scott. 1876, South Carolina, Louisiana, and Florida sent two slate of electors. They had two governments, by the way, and we didn't know what to do. Why did South Carolina, Florida, and Louisiana do it? To hold the country hostage to end Reconstruction. It worked. The commission was 8-7. It didn't work. Nobody accepted it. The way it ended is when Hayes did a deal with these three states. You give me the electors, I'll kick the Union Army out. The rest is history. It led to Jim Crow. If you're looking for historical guidance, this is not the one to pick. If you're looking for a way to convince people there was no fraud, having a commission chosen by Nancy Pelosi, Mitch McConnell, and John Roberts is not going to get you to where you want to go. It ain't going to work. So it's not going to do any good. It's going to delay, and it gives credibility to a dark chapter of our history. That's why I'm not with you. But I will fight to my death for you. You're able to object. You're not doing anything wrong. Other people have objected. I just think it's a uniquely bad idea to delay this election. Trump and I, we've had a hell of a journey. I hate it being this way. Oh, my God, I hate it. From my point of view, he's been a consequential president. But today, first thing you'll see, all I can say is count me out. Enough is enough. I've tried to be helpful. But when the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled 4-3 that they didn't violate the Constitution of Wisconsin, I agree with the 3, but I accept the 4. If Al Gore can accept 5-4, he's not president. I can accept Wisconsin 4-3. Pennsylvania, it went to the Second Circuit. So much for all the judges being in Trump's pocket. They said, no, you're wrong. I accept the Pennsylvania Second Circuit that Trump's lawsuit wasn't right. Georgia, they said the Secretary of State took the law in his own hands. He changed the election laws unlawfully. A federal judge said, no, I accept the federal judge even though I don't agree with it. Fraud. They say there's 66,000 people in Georgia under 18 voted. How many people believe that? I asked, give me 10. And I had one. They said 8,000 felons in prison in Arizona voted. Give me 10. I hadn't gotten one. Does that say there's problems in every election? I don't buy this. Enough's enough. We got to end it. Vice President Pence, what they're asking you to do, you won't do because you can't. You talk about interesting times. I associate myself with Rand Paul. How many times will you hear that? The mob has done something nobody else could do to get me and Rand to agree. Rand is right. If you're a conservative, this is the most offensive concept in the world that a single person could disenfranchise 155 million people. The President of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Senate and the House of Representatives, open all certificates, and the votes shall then be counted. The person having the greatest number of votes for president shall be president. Where in there does it say Mike can say, I don't like the results? I want to send them back to the states. I believe there was fraud. To the conservatives who believe in the Constitution, now's your chance to stand up and be counted. Originalism, count me in. It means what it says. So, Mike, Mr. Vice President, just hang in there. They said we can count on Mike. All of us can count on the Vice President. You're going to do the right thing. You're going to do the constitutional thing. You got a son who flies F-35s. You got a son-in-law who flies F-18s. They're out there flying so that we can get it right here. There are people dying, to my good friend from Illinois, to make sure we have a chance to argue among ourselves. And when it's over, it is over. It is over. The final thing, Joe Biden. I've traveled the world with Joe. I hoped he lost. I prayed he would lose. He won. He's a legitimate president of the United States. I cannot convince people, certain groups, by my words, but I will tell you by my actions, that maybe I, among any, above all others in this body, need to say this. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are lawfully elected and will become the president and the vice president of the United States on January the 20th.
Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina.
Majority Leader.
Mr. President, I yield back the balance of our time.
And that's it for speakers on the Republican side.
All time has expired. The question is, shall the objection submitted by the gentleman from Arizona, Mr. Gosar, and the senator from Texas, Mr. Cruz, and others, be sustained?
Vice President Pence is about
to... Is there a second?
All right, he's asked for a second.
There is. Clerk will call the roll.
All right, the Senate is now voting on the first objection to the electoral votes from Arizona. Now, this vote likely won't take very long because all of the members of the Senate are seated at their desks and voting from their desks, which is rare, but it speaks to the gravity of the moment. Let's listen into the roll call for just a moment.
Mr. Booker.
No.
Mr. Bozeman.
No.
Mr. Braun.
No.
Mr. Brown.
No.
Mr. Burr.
No.
Ms. Cantwell.
No.
Mrs. Capito. Mr. Cardin.
No.
Mr. Carper.
I hesitate to talk over this, but just to point out, this is a vote on the objection. So no votes mean essentially that members of both parties, and we've heard many Republicans there voting no, are saying that they want to accept the votes from Arizona.
Mr. Cornyn. Ms. Cortez Masto. Mr. Cotton. Mr. Kramer.
No.
Mr. Crapo.
No.
Mr. Cruz.
Aye.
Mr. Daines.
No.
Ms. Duckworth.
No.
Mr. Durbin.
No.
Ms. Ernst.
No.
Mrs. Feinstein. Mrs. Fisher.
No.
Mrs. Gillibrand.
No.
Mr. Graham.
No.
Mr. Grassley.
No.
Mr. Haggerty. Ms. Harris.
No.
Ms. Hassan.
No.
Mr. Holy. Mr. Heinrich. Mr. Hickenlooper. Ms. Hirono. No. Mr. Hoven. Mrs. Hyde-Smith. Mr. Inhofe. Mr. Johnson. Mr. Kane. Mr. Kelly.
You're listening to CBS News live coverage of a roll call vote in the Senate on the electoral votes from Arizona. If the no votes prevail, that means that the Senate is voting to accept the electoral votes from Arizona.